Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro Call. Today is February 28th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live as well as those of you listening via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotorVitality on iTunes or Google Podcasts or going to MotorVitality.com and listening to, you know, years and years and years and years of these. So I definitely want to appreciate you guys when you're on live. I did not send out an invite to everybody yesterday. I totally spaced it. I'm actually going to, and then I completely forgot to. So I really appreciate it when you guys hop on here. It means you put it on your schedule and you consider it valuable and important, and that means a lot to me. So thank you. I'm going to start the call off the way I do every week, which is to ask, was there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Any questions or thoughts or comments or anything that we can help with?
Okay, I have a question.
Go, Stacy.
I went to a house yesterday. She wanted her softener tested. It's fine. It's only a 4-year-old softener from another manufacturer. Then she texts me later. She's on city water. Wants to know if I can test her water.
Test her water.
For stuff in. And I said, well, I can. Is there a specific health concern or something? Apparently, she bought a plant from Amazon, had it sitting on the windowsill above her sink, and apparently some parasites crawled out of it and crawled up her faucet. And she wants tested to see if there are parasites in her water. Now, first of all, let's keep in mind, this is the dirtiest house I have been in all 6 years I've been doing. And she's concerned about these parasites, but I'm like, I don't know of any for parasites. I went through the whole lab list for our lab. There's nothing on parasites. How do we test to see if there's parasites?
Yeah, that's the only thing I would simply recommend. First off, that's hilarious. You know, I hate to laugh. I mean, sometimes if customers, you know, I think sometimes when if they ever heard internal discussions from, and not only in this industry, I think in anybody who does any kind of sales or in-home sales, they all have those instances that are just, you know, that you just sort of shake your head and go, what? The short answer to your question, and maybe somebody else has a better suggestion or knows something more, but when it's something like that, I would defer that to a lab or, you know, somewhere, an independent lab. Just let her know that we don't test for parasites, that we focus on aesthetics. And what you can do is recommend water treatment. You know, I don't know if she has, does she have a filter, like a pre-filter or sediment filter or anything, or a carbon filter on her house?
No, you said she doesn't.
So, you know, I mean, I am a big fan for people that want to chlorinate their lines or clean out their lines, you know, even with a big house, or especially with shark bites. It's so easy to do nowadays. You don't even have to know how to sweat pipe. You can do it for really inexpensively, to just take a 10-inch filter housing and install it on a water line after the equipment. And then, you know, it gives you access to all the water lines in the house. I thought you were going to tell me that. I didn't know where you were going when you said she bought a plant off of Amazon. That's pretty funny. But and she think parasites from the plant crawled into the faucet.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's possible. I guess you don't know where the plants came from. You know, an Amazon plant could be, you know, I suppose. I've never heard of that, but I'm not a parasite/plant expert. So anybody else ever heard of that?
It's probably larva of some sort.
Yeah, probably. That's what I'm thinking, too. But
yeah,
I
saw that. It was on like it wasn't the Discovery Channel. Oh, it was the Sci-Fi Channel. That's what I thought on.
right. Oh, yeah, they turned into.
Tell her it was probably bot flies, and she has nothing to worry about it. Tell her to YouTube it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know what a bot fly is, but you should watch it.
Okay. Good. That's a good question, though. I think the only thing on that one, you know, I think to go into that and to try and delve into that with some, you know, those topics with some people, mm-hmm. I think opens up a can of larva that that you can't really.
I was apparently her third choice because she's already contacted the CDC.
Yeah.
They told her she had to have a referral from somebody else.
Jen, they told you to call you. The CDC told her to call you. That's great. You know, do you ever run across those? I mean, we all, I know, have run across those people out there that you just, I mean, there are whack jobs. I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like offensive, but there are some strange people that you just, that you run into, and I, you know, I think we've done a call on that, on kind of how to handle that before, and some of the wackiest experiences. But you do run across those people where they, you know, they just set an appointment, and they, especially house leads. It's one of the reasons I don't like house leads, man. That's the ones that always seem to just, you know, they call and they set the appointment, and you go out there, and they're just, you know, I don't, lonely or something, I don't know. But they, I mean, that's where I've learned about this lady that was spending like $12 a bottle on this water that supposedly was the water that was still around when the flood was there, and the great flood, and it was like Noah water, you know, where they bottled this stuff, and it was just basically spring water, but it was because it was on the surface during the flood, it was blessed water, you know. And I looked at that and go, wow, you're willing to spend $12 a bottle on this? that is just unbelievable. You know, sometimes you run across people and you have to do what Jen always suggests to people when they're talking to me, just nod and smile.
Does the hydrological cycle suggest to us that all the water we have here was during the Great Flood?
It does. Actually, yes, but that's science, Stacey.
Yeah.
That's you know, the only new water we have on the planet since the existence of the planet has fallen to the Earth from asteroids and stuff. You know, that's the only new water that's here. All the other water has. That's why we can destroy our water. That people don't realize that. Well, you know, the Earth is 2/3 water. We only 1% of it's potable. Number one, and number two, that's all the water we get. We don't get any more water. So if we start destroying it, and you know, if we destroy our atmosphere, and I don't want to get into the. You know, I definitely don't want to get into a political discussion about this, but if we destroy our atmosphere and poison our atmosphere, the water is going to be poisoned. You know, evaporation, the hydrologic cycle, actually does a really, really good job of distilling and cleaning our water, right? I mean, that's distillation. And then the sun's rays are UV, so it does a really good job of water treatment. But if we destroy the atmosphere, we make the water picks up pollutants before it even falls back down to the ground. If we destroy it when it's in the ground or on the earth, particularly using radioactive chemicals like they do with hydraulic fracturing, if we destroy that water, it doesn't matter if we can create these rubber pools and keep it from seeping into the ground, which, I mean, that's the big problem, right, is that they create these big rubber, like pools, but it's going to take 20,000 years for that water to be treated again, to be able to be treated, because it's radioactive. It's got isotopes in it, and so it won't. The water is not going to be useful. And if we continue to do that or similar type things to our water, even if we keep those plastic or rubber pool linings from ripping or deteriorating and having that water leak into our underground water aquifers, we're destroying. We only have so much water. So I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, yes, the same amount of water that we've always had. So yes, it's the same amount of water we've always had. Anyway, interesting. Any other questions anything we can help with? I did have kind of a neat article that I wanted to talk about today that I had seen that I wanted to go through and just have a chat about with you guys. But anything else on that topic or another? Yeah, go ahead.
I got an application yesterday. This lady is starting a special needs farm, and it's a new build on an old farmhouse, and she's on a municipal cistern. In other words, it's being fed by a guy bringing in water from the municipal and feeding her cistern. Comes out, goes to a pump, and she wants to be able to have pure water, and she can't have a salt because of the application. She don't want to put salt in her septic system. Any recommendations?
Well, a couple other questions. How much water does she need?
Well, she's using about 10,000 gallons a month.
Wow. Okay, so 10,000 a month. So we're we're at 300 or 400 a day, roughly.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and when you say pure, is it just the sodium that she doesn't want in the water? I mean, define pure. What? How does she want zero TDS? Does she want? You know what? What is? Because pure can mean a lot of different things, right? So, you know, if you're just using water for irrigation, then purifying it just means, you know, taking the stuff out that would kill the lawn. You know, it doesn't even have to be potable at that point.
I think what she's getting at, she doesn't want a salt system. She wants a no salt system.
Yeah.
And she also wants a UV on it to make sure that there is no micro stuff in it. So.
Yeah, yeah. Have you, how much money does she have to put into it?
Quite a bit.
What's that?
Quite a bit.
Okay. Well, I mean, then you can, you know, there are things like you can put a commercial RO in with a couple storage tanks. I mean, you can put a couple, you know, small commercial membranes in that are capable of producing, you know, 1,000 gallons a day of water. You have to have storage tanks. You know, you have to have some pressure. She's going to have it's being supplied by the municipality.
Yes.
So she's going to have plenty of pressure.
Water delivered is what she does.
What's that?
She's having water delivered in a truck, but it's coming. It's coming from the municipality.
Right. Okay. she's going to go through water. You know, I mean, with an RO, you still have to have a drain. You still have to have reject water. If you're going to remove the contaminants in the water and using membrane separation, which is what a reverse osmosis system does, you still have to have a place for the drain. You have to have a place for the concentrate to go, which means that she's going to increase the amount of water she's currently using. So if she's having it shipped in, trucked in,
yeah.
I mean, that's and if she's got the money, I mean, she could probably do a system like that with a larger, you know, she'd have to have a couple storage tanks. What's the water? So municipal water is at probably 7 grain prior to the 7 or 10 grain prior to the, what's that?
That's about 7 to 10 grains.
Okay, so she could use you could put a commercial RO in there. I mean, she could do that for $15,000 or $20,000 probably. Does she have the space to put it in?
Yeah, she's got plenty of room. Yeah.
Yeah. See, we see that a lot down in Florida. I mean, what it sounds to me is it's a similar situation to what we see in Florida with the horse farms. I mean, there are people down there that need that kind of water. The same thing. They don't want their horses to have the sodium. They don't want to put softeners in. So they put a lot of whole house ROs in I call them whole house, but they're more for the barns, for the whole horse house ROs but small, commercial reverse osmosis systems that will supply the, the horse barns or in this case, I think that would do it. You just need to have a space for the storage tanks. You put a couple 80-gallon storage tanks in, you get an RO that is capable of producing 800 or 1,000 gallons a day, and then put a couple 80-gallon storage tanks in there so that she always has access to the water, repressurizes the system, and you're in good shape. So. That's what I would recommend in that. There's be quite a bit of maintenance. She's going to have to, especially if she put a softener in before the RO, that would extend the life of the membranes quite a bit, obviously, just like a household residential RO. So putting a softener in, and then that would take out the hardness again from the system, So.
Right. How do you feel about a saltless system?
What's that?
How do you feel about a saltless system?
How do I feel about a saltless system?
Yeah.
Like the TAC systems, I would recommend, Greg, you probably weren't on the call when we had another Greg. Last year we had a guest speaker, Greg Reinecke, on, and he did it, it was an hour long, but it was, you can find that call in the archives on where Greg came on and talked about different salt. He did it very objectively, I thought, gave a lot of great information about the different technologies that are there and what you can expect from them and how to, whether they work or don't work and that type of thing. But in general, the only ones I have seen any kind of quantifiable evidence on is the TAC systems where where you have something crystallization. I can't remember what the TAC stands for exactly. I'd have to look at it and read. But I've seen that one actually does have, under the proper water conditions, some quantifiable scale reduction results. So if this person is thinking of a if she is going to be more of a put something in and think it works person, or is she going to, because there are some people that are fine with those things, especially if they're not bathing or showering in the water and they don't really care about the soft water benefits, they're not doing dishes and stuff, because you definitely do not get soft water benefits. You do get with that technology, you do get a little bit of scale reduction, primarily because it converts the calcium from calcium bicarbonate into calcium carbonate in the tank, so that conversion does not occur on the faucets or shower heads that type of thing. So it doesn't remove the hardness from the water. It just makes it makes the conversion from dissolved hardness to scale happen at a different location than on the faucets. It doesn't completely make that transition. You do have a little bit of scale reduction, and it does help some. So it depends on what results she wants. If you put a technology like that in, then yeah, you would see something, but more that, I've run across people who put that who have put one of those things in, particularly on city water, because on city water they always require you to have a carbon filter in front of it. And so people are used to feeling the water with the chlorine in it and smelling and tasting the water with the chlorine in it. And so they've got the carbon filter in front of this TAC filter, and they will swear up and down how much better their water is. I mean, oh, my water is so much better. It's so great. When they, the test results don't show it be that different other than it doesn't have chlorine in it. So if she's the kind of person that she would be satisfied with that, you know, I don't know, you know, it really depends on what she's looking for. You know, is she going to want something that she can take to a lab and see quantifiable results? You know what I'm saying?
Just wants to get this water so it's drinkable and safe enough for these kids. And there's a lot of them with special needs, cancer patients, stuff
yeah.
like that. She don't want to have any microbials in the water and halfway decent filtered water.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's coming originally from the municipality, then it's probably going to be pretty decent to begin with. And putting a UV and a carbon filter on would probably make it, you know, running it through a carbon filter and then a UV after would probably make it plenty potable, assuming that it's not, you know, assuming that the city's doing their job to make it potable. It's just a what level do you want it? And I almost made a really off-color joke of like, oh, it's just special needs kids, you know. But I would never do that. That would be completely inappropriate. So anyway, that's the only suggestion. Anybody else have any suggestions with that? I actually am curious about the farm because my girlfriend, as some of you know, has an autistic daughter, pretty severely autistic daughter, and she's been looking at places like that where she can contribute and help and stuff like that. So that's kind of interesting. So as much as I might make a joke, I actually very interested in that type of a program. But anyway, there's 5 minutes left on the call, and I love it when I have kind of a loose idea to talk about something and we come up with other questions. Greg, does that answer your question? Did that help you at all?
Yes.
Okay. So we obviously don't – I'm not going to jump into this article. We'll save that for another time. So we've got about 5 minutes. Anything else you guys have that you want to talk about? I had one idea, one last thing. This, I was going to talk about this, and I didn't send out a message and give you guys a chance to think about it. But as you know, and I'll take a moment because you guys are the core people. You're on here, you're on here regularly and stuff like that. I'm always looking for ideas on topics, right? So sometimes when I'm struggling for an idea, like I said this morning, I'll go on LinkedIn or look on social media, and if I have seen an interesting article that I like, then we'll talk about that. My favorite topics, my favorite calls are the ones like this where we have questions and we just sort of talk about – I like it when they're, you know, discussions and we get into things that were kind of unexpected. I like – that's the reason for this call, is to create a forum where we can all get together and talk with each other. The idea I had was in talking about what we learned from our first job. So like the first job ever, you know, what lesson I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool to kind of have a discussion to learn what we learned from our very first job that helps us in our jobs now? So going all the way back to, there's some people like Corey who this is their first job, you know, right out of high school. So, right, Corey?
Not exactly.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Seeing if you guys were still awake. But, no, I thought that would be kind of an interesting discussion. I mean, I was thinking all the way back to my very first job, you know, whether it was, you know, my very first real job, like hourly job, was at Long John Silver's. And there were definitely things about that job, even way back then, where I learned that has helped me in my career and specifically in this industry a lot. You know, so I thought that might be kind of an interesting topic. You know, maybe a variation of that, you know, where did you learn your work ethic? You know, where did that come from? Where does one develop a work ethic, you know, and how do you translate that into this industry? Would that be an interesting conversation for you guys?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm always open to ideas. So I would ask that of you guys, you know, if you have ideas, any thoughts on this stuff. Other than that, it's you guys, the only, you know, then if you don't throw me some of your ideas, you know, to things that you guys want to talk about, you get stuck having to deal with what's in Kelly's head almost all the time. And that's got to, trust me, that gets old. I live with what's in my head all the time, and you don't want to be in here as much as that. So it's a strange place to be. What other ideas do you guys want to, in the coming weeks, what do you guys want to talk about?
I got one, Kelly.
Okay.
All kinds of articles are coming out on lead, also Legionnaire disease.
Legionnaires?
Yeah.
Okay. So to have, you know, so I was just, there was a big article in this last month's issue of Water Quality Products. And on a topic like lead, and actually that was their special report. And that's in this month's issue of WQP. I'm looking at it right now. And it says a look at lead. That's by Amy McIntosh, who she does, she's actually an editor at WQP. So, but I thought about seeing, there's a big map that shows all the lead lines and the, you know, lead service lines in the U.S. and stuff like that in this last issue. And I thought about talking about that too, because yeah, lead is still an issue. And of course we have Flint. Legionella would be one that would be kind of interesting. That's one that we haven't talked a lot about. I always like to see if I can find experts to come in and talk about those types of things, you know, so that it's not just me educating about it. But yeah, definitely. So a little more technical information about some things like that. So lead, Legionella is a unique one. That's one that people haven't talked about. That's definitely out there. I haven't seen a lot of training on that. So that would be a good one to talk about that. I like that. That's a good idea. PFAS. I've been trying to put together a good PFAS conversation. And next week I'm going to be in D.C. for the Water Quality Association fly-in. You know, we get to go talk to Congress, and the PFAS issue will be a huge deal. I'm going to try and line somebody up when we're there to talk about the PFAS issue on the call coming up. Good suggestion. What else? Okay, well, we don't have to. I think that's good enough for today. Then we'll save this article for another day. And I do appreciate it. I really do. I appreciate you guys joining on the call. I hope that you find as much value as I do out of the conversations. And we will talk to you next week, if not before. So everybody, be safe, stay warm. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.